Hi guys, welcome to the Accounting Tech Tar Pit, presented by Early Adopters Hub, the accelerator for accounting tech. I'm your host, Jack Teal, and this is a podcast for accounting tech startup founders focused on no BS, candid conversations about the challenges and benefits of building a startup in the accounting industry. Great to be back, listeners. Looking forward to another awesome conversation alongside my good friend Johan. We're joined today by another early stage founder, a guy called Gavin Simpson, founder of a new startup called 445. Gavin, great to have you here.
Thanks, Jack. Pleasure to be here. Looking forward to it.
Likewise. And before we get into, I suppose, some deep questions, I thought I'd give our listeners who might not already know you a little bit more insight into your background. So I've done my research, I think, and from what I can see, you spent a number of years earlier in your career in the Big Four environment at EY as an audit manager. I've been there, not as a manager, but riveting stuff in audit. So it's good to see that you made it through and obviously learned a lot. Then you moved into a finance director role, eventually moving to found your own business, Option A, which I understand to be a temporary labor business. And now you're the CEO and founder of both Cloud Finance Accounting, a modern digital accounting firm, as well as 445, which handles or is tackling the automation of month end for accounting firms. Obviously a nice combination, those two. So pretty broad experience throughout. Obviously finance as, you know, a cornerstone to all of it. But still, nevertheless, some broad experience, obviously quite handy when it comes to founding a startup, because you're usually expected to wear a number of hats and do a little bit of everything. So look, are there any amendments you want to make to that? Any additions, anything important that you think is relevant to the conversation today that I missed from your experience?
No, I mean, as a headlines and highlights, they're pretty accurate. Obviously, there's a lot of lowlights, which I don't put on my LinkedIn fully enough, but you know, I did work in all those places in all those times, so pretty accurate.
Love that. Yeah, I think I've got one or two that aren't, might not be on my LinkedIn or a month here or a month there that isn't worth the effort. So look, I want to cut straight to the chase with our conversation, Gavin. And you know, if you can take us back to the beginning of the journey with 445 and try and talk us through the first big challenge or big mistake that you made in hindsight, looking back, you can obviously see that.
Yeah, sure. So going back a bit and trying to be sort of reasonably brief, during COVID, or I'd actually planned to move to Australia and I started doing an MBA. And you may remember COVID happened in 2020, 21, and that meant we had to do our MBA online. And wasn't quite the same, but it was still really, really good. And in doing that, we talked a lot about starting up businesses and doing various things and creative thinking. Long story short, I deferred that halfway through, combination of actually wanting to do stuff and not being in Australia. Wasn't quite what I'd signed up for. I kind of thought, right, now's the time, I'm going to do the startup. I had this idea in the background in my mind, 445, based on my own experience. So I quite eagerly engaged the developer and I was all for, let's test it, break it, see what happens. And yeah, so going back to the mistake, I engaged the developer based on sort of my own paradigm. And there are a number of reasons, but I guess I could think of 5,000 of them being the amount of money I spent in about 4.5 weeks. And then realized, like, this is I'm burning cash here. And whilst I wanted to work and I believed in it, I was just probably a bit nervous I was building the wrong thing.
I don't think you're alone in the, you know, I think it's pretty common startup wisdom that, you know, you got to get things out to market, build them quickly, get feedback, make them better. Continue to iterate and learn. That's basically the, you know, what a lot of startup founders hear. So, I mean, what was it about that process now that you're looking back and saying, no, actually, I made that wasn't the ideal scenario. And there is how do you see that there's a better way than just building it and getting something out?
Well, I guess I'd caveat this, but I don't know for sure because I'm still in the process of doing it. And what I did then was based on my previous experience. So I'd set up service businesses before, and I'd found one or two customers, started serving them, and then I guess honed the model in over time. But I guess the difference in this instance was I only had one customer, which was me, and the tech required a lot of investment, you know, SaaS product, for a relatively small amount of money with each unit. So it didn't quite work in the same way. Sorry, I've gone off tangent slightly. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a good response. And so in terms of working with the agency, you know, you mentioned you figured it out quite quickly. So what was it in particular that led you to take stock and stop that process? And how hard was that decision for you?
Yeah, it was quite hard because it was really based on gut feel. And I probably had that within, and it's nothing against the agency. It's probably my fault for going to them without, you know, enough validation and clear enough vision. And they were quite happy to just start building. So I had a gut feel about it. And then when we reviewed milestones, I sort of realized they didn't get the product as much as I thought they did. And they'd not even gone as far as I thought they'd gone based on our milestones. So there was a big expectation gap. Again, probably my fault. I'm not blaming the agency. So it was a combination of that and then a combination of reflecting and, you know, revisiting Lean Startup and listening to a few podcasts, which link again. I think I heard Johan with, is it Amy Hardson-White she's called? Speaking very specifically about accounting tech. And so that got me to sort of, right, I'm going to take a pause and think about getting true validation first.
And Gavin, to ask specifically about that, I mean, you kind of covered it, but it is quite a big topic, and really it's quite difficult to overcome the best practice and what everybody's saying out there and all the startup gurus. But what did you feel was really the biggest problem in building the product first to kind of like try to validate the problem?
So the biggest problem was, I guess, without going into too much product detail, we've pivoted slightly from my vision then. And the vision I had then was pretty niche. It was to do with, but there is a gap in the market for it based on conversations, based on zero comments. But we didn't have the kind of in-depth validation which, working with you guys, I feel we now have in terms of the problem. So as an illustration, and it sounds maybe silly in hindsight, what we were first developing might have worked with like 2 out of 20 clients I have, whereas this one would work with like 20 out of 20. And that's just me, without even speaking to other people.
So do you think from your perspective, like what is the key problem there? Is it that you committed to the product too early or committed to the problem too early and potentially there's no real market there? Is that what maybe your learning was?
Yeah, commit to the problem too early.
If you were to go back, if you could go back to the start, I mean, obviously you've made adjustments now and you're taking a different approach, but if you go back to the beginning or if you were to start another startup, or if you were the person listening to this podcast right now thinking about building a startup, what's the first step that you would recommend now, knowing the process you've been through and what you've seen?
Speaking to other informed users to understand if they have the same problem or to understand to what extent they have same problems around the area.
And why is that so important? I mean, it's a stupid question, but still it's worth asking. Why is that important?
Even learning, taking a step back and just speaking about the problem first rather than showing them something, you start removing layers of bias, you start getting much, much more objective answers. And like that's only going to help you. It's like, if you don't want to do those conversations, it's like you're only cheating yourself, you know what I mean? It's a pretty, I think there's an analogy in one of those books we were reading, like it's like cheating in your partial opening class, you know what I mean? It's like only you that's going to lose out of it.
I think that's something that we see in a lot of the startups that we've worked with and the founders that we've seen is a challenge though, you know, like talking to people and wanting to find out that you might not be onto something or getting challenged and finding out that maybe the direction that you're going down or the vision that you had is actually something different to what people need. So How was your experience there? How did you come to terms with the fact that maybe what your vision was isn't actually what people needed?
I mean, I was really pleased, to be honest. Like, so there was enough of my vision, like, I guess because I have accounting practices as well, I understood the conversations. It wasn't like they haven't explained why they thought this. As they were saying them and I became more informed maybe how they do things, it became quite like a natural answer. So it wasn't like I didn't have any ego about it. So I just wanted to like solve the best problem rather than have my problem be solved.
I mean, I think maybe you take that for granted, not having much of an ego and being quite humble, but it doesn't necessarily fit into the standard characteristics of somebody who's going to go and start a business. You know, at the end of the day, to go down this route, Gavin, to have committed time, effort, money, resources to this, you've got to have some level of conviction and confidence. So how do you kind of weigh up those two things? You know, having confidence and conviction and being able to push through and do the typical startup thing. I'm going to keep trying. And the humble, I don't know, and I need to listen to people. How do you balance those two?
Well, again, trying, not saying I got this right, because, you know, we're still building a product. And you're right, it's like if you listen to everybody as well, you'll never get anywhere. So I think I try very hard to listen to everyone, but I wouldn't say a necessarily action on everything, but try and reflect and pick up common themes and then maybe revisit them yourself, look at them different ways. So that'd be what I try to do. And then secondly, in the other business I started up, like I made a load of mistakes in that. And some of them, you know, if I listened better to advice, I probably picked them up. So like embarrassing things like we're a labor company and we didn't have a shareholders agreement. The other shareholders told me we didn't need it. Of course, what happened 3 years later is they all fell out, not me. And we had this awkward situation, which I now advise clients on, given this example where I made a mistake. So, you know, I'm open to their lessons to learn and listen to other people.
In that early stage of 445, other than, I suppose, the challenge or the struggle you had, or potentially the mistake you made around burning through a bit of cash to find out that you were building something you weren't validated on, have there been any other challenges or mistakes that have stood out in the process to date?
Yeah, if I was doing it again, I could have been quicker, maybe on like some of the we spoke before with the initial stage of having conversations. Some of the stages after that, you know, testing things, getting feedback, I probably learned my approach through during that process. So even like Johan will probably remember, is I almost wanted to build too much before getting feedback, and just to like build a little, as much or as little as possible to get feedback, rather than try to, you know, show loads of iterations at once. So I probably could have been better and then quicker at doing the iterations well so far on that basis.
Maybe moving forward to a future challenge. So we've been looking back, speaking about your experience today. If we look forward from where you are now, as I understand it, you've got validation around the problem, validation around the concept that you've designed, and now going through this process of trying to build it, you know, that MVP, something that's going to start delivering value. How confident are you at this point that, you know, when you finish building this, even this first version, that you're going to have people who are willing to pay for it?
Between fairly and very, so you might say 70% confident. Like, I think it's going to work, but, you know, I'm not absolutely certain. Like, I wouldn't, you know, bet my life in it. And sometimes, like, you know, working, it's probably an advantage and a disadvantage. I worked with a lot of founders in my accounting background, and some people have like 100% really believe, you know, they have the blinkers on, but I'm not quite built that way. So I'm more like, I sort of play it in my head, all scenarios. Either that's good or that's bad, but yeah, we'll find out.
Well, I know. I don't think it's a bad thing to prepare yourself for the best and the worst. I mean, is that...
It's like you don't have the gift of ignorance, you know what I mean? Because you see the numbers and you know what might happen, and it's maybe easier for me to play it in my head. Sometimes that can be like, I don't know. Could go either way.
No, it absolutely can. And I think something that we recommend to a lot of startups is to do an exercise called a pre-mortem, which is basically to look ahead, set your plan, you know, ideal situation, what happens here, what do we want to get to, what's our goal for 6-12 months time, and then ask yourself, okay, if we get 6-12 months down the track and we look back and we haven't hit any of these goals, the business has failed, we didn't get product market fit, we didn't get traction, what's gone wrong? And it just gives you the opportunity to kind of open your mind to all the risks that maybe subconsciously you don't really want to address. You're kind of happy to avoid in the moment. Is that a mental exercise, regardless of whether or not you do it officially or formally? Is that something that you're doing constantly?
Yeah, so on that chewy note, yeah, that's something I do constantly. But I maybe don't quantify it quite like that. That's quite a good tip. But to some extent, I do that a lot. I also do the other mental exercise as well, where I'm thinking, oh, if we get 10,000 users, we can sell for 25 million in 2.5 years' time, and I'll like buy a football team with the money, and it'll be great. So, and the reality is obviously between the two of them.
Well, that's right. Everything's on a spectrum, and thinking it's a black or white, you know, win or lose scenario as well is probably a mistake that a lot of people make. You know, startups can be somewhere along that spectrum, whether it's raising millions of dollars and becoming a unicorn, or whether it's falling into the tar pit and joining a number of other dead startups. There's a lot of successful stories in between, profitable businesses, sustainable businesses, some that exit at $5, $10 million. You know, there's a lot more that determine success. So for you, how do you see that moving forward? Do you have a target, or do you have a very broad brush approach to what kind of justifies success to you?
I would like to exit in 3 to 5 years' time with an amount of money which I think will be like enough to make me sort of like, you know, financially sort of secure forever. But maybe going back a stage, like, you know, so that's like long term. I kind of think in short term goals. So it's, we spoke before about the validation problem. Just now, my goal is to have like paying customers, and I want to do that before I raise any investment. So almost the bootstrap until we get people signed up willing to pay. And then, you know, depending on the finances, we can keep funding it, or depending on finances, how many signed up, we can maybe get an investment to accelerate it. So my sort of short term goal is that, is to have people willing to pay.
Gavin, on that, so like you said, actually knowing that there's people willing to pay is the best validation, the most important one. And that's what you're aiming for. But the ultimate validation of that is when someone actually puts the card details and there's a payment to come through. So obviously that's where you're heading, but you're not quite there yet. So what kind of signals are you looking for that you feel gives you validation you are on the right path, that this is something that's going to end up valuable enough someone wants to actually pay for?
Well, signals just now, you know, are like feedback from potential users. You know, they see our demo product, and the feedback for people who are interested seems pretty strong, as in they understand what we're doing, they have a few concerns and suggestions, but they can imagine using it. So that'd be one stage of feedback. I think the second stage of feedback before paying is when we have our model ready, or our, sorry, beta product ready with like real data, is like, can they use it? So, you know, actually monitoring, are they going to use it rather than the alternative? And maybe measure that with like time on the software or amount of clients they add in, or so, and so forth. And then once we know they're using it, it becomes part of their workflow. You know, hopefully the next stage to pay for it is quite seamless.
All right. So from your perspective, there's kind of like a bit of that journey of getting some initial validation from the feedback you're hearing, and then seeing the behavior of people with the product and actually using the product, and from there moving to them most likely willing to pay.
Yeah, nicely summarized.
Yeah, it's an interesting journey, and I think there's risk and uncertainty at every stage, and obviously this stage that you're at now, you're comfortable that there's a pain point or a problem. You're comfortable that the concept that you've put forward to these users, if you can execute on it, you're confident it's going to add value, but it's still, every stage has a level of uncertainty. It's more about, I think the analogy that works quite well is you're sitting at a poker table and you're getting to see a few other people's hands. It doesn't mean you've seen everybody's hands. There might still be someone sitting there with pocket aces that you've got no idea of, but you increase your chance of success and you minimize your uncertainty with each stage of validation. So, I mean, if you finish building this MVP and people aren't willing to pay for it, what is the process for you there? Why can you understand, or can you explain why that could occur and what that would mean?
So if people weren't willing to pay for it, there's a bit of, you know, follow-on questions to understand why. I mean, there's actually a stage before that, sorry, of getting people in my firm to use it as well, which ideally I'd like to do before I put it in front of other people. But it's understanding why. And ultimately, you know, if they say this is slower than doing it on Excel, and we're not willing to do it, I need to understand can we change that? And that's one of the tests I have internally, is to make sure this is better than Excel or Google Sheets or any workarounds. But, you know, if we can't solve that, or if Xero make their own product in the next month and break my heart, I just have to, you know, probably have to revisit and think, oh, this isn't the best use of the cash I have available in my life right now.
Yeah, that's a tough question. There's a lot of different directions I suppose you could head. So maybe I'll change direction, and with the last few minutes, we can speak a little bit about your experience on the other side as an accountant. So you mentioned in some of the prep work that we did that one of the reasons you started a startup was because of your experience as a customer. What do you think? I think what you're alluding to was that it seems like a lot of vendors are getting it wrong, and putting a disproportionate amount into marketing and sales and not enough into product and a few other bits and pieces. So what do you think, is that the number one, or what do you think most accounting tech startups out there are doing wrong or getting wrong, or the biggest mistakes that they're making?
So there are some very good like startups, to be clear, like software. So like, say like Dext and things that have come in, they are incredible, and they've, you know, changed how we work. But on top of that, I think, yeah, there's some like pretty poor products. Like, why? What are they getting wrong? Sorry, was a question. Sometimes I feel they just don't do much for what they charge. So it's like they've got a concept to do, like, I don't know, timesheets, I've seen a few do, or opening purchase orders. And it's just that what they're charging for the value they're giving is too far off. And they don't seem to quite understand it, but they've got like a lot of marketing weight behind them. Some of the payment ones, although they're getting better now, but when they started, I was struggling to get into them with what you can just do with like a quick file conversion and uploading yourself. But for the money they're charging, it was just, yeah, I couldn't quite get in my head how it worked. Now, some of them have now gone away, so I feel like at least I wasn't imagining that. So it's partly that. And I also just had a view that even working in industry, like, we're doing things that, like, it's not technically difficult to do, but we're still doing them manually, or like really, you know, I guess accounting is maybe not the first port of tech funded innovation. Sorry, I went on a tangent again.
No, that's all right. Maybe a little bonus and then we can wrap it up would be, you know, just to get into the, for anyone listening, because the listeners are possibly people who are building accounting tech startups, and understanding the psychology of an accountant when it comes to pricing is always very interesting, because as any customer, I think accountants analyze the pricing models more than anybody. So from your perspective, when you're talking about these startups not necessarily doing a lot for what they're charging, what are you comparing it to? What is going on in your mind to kind of come up with that?
Well, two things. Probably value you get for other software for similar spend. So like Xero or Dex would be an example, how much they cost and how much time you save. And the touch on the time you save. So I know what the team costs per hourly rate, and you know what you save from the software. So if something's not saving a lot of time, you know, I think I read somewhere you should save between 5 and 10 times the amount of time in terms of that cost benefit. A lot of them aren't near that, and they've not thought about it. So that'd be why I guess I'm not for some of those products without mentioning names.
Thanks, Gavin. And as always, the last question we'll ask you is our tar pit question. So what do you see as the biggest tar pit mistake that accounting tech startups need to avoid?
I'm going to answer in two parts. So some of it comes from my experience before, like as an FD in support, is I saw a lot of businesses brand themselves as the Uber of something, and they were going to revolutionize an industry by being the Uber, and I never quite knew what it meant. And I think they didn't either. They just thought this industry needs some new tech without actually really thinking it through or going through the details of it. And we're talking earlier, like, Uber hasn't made any money ever. You know, they have a business model, which is pretty ballsy, and it might work when we all go to like automated cars, but it might not work at all, which I think the latter option is more likely. And that's an exception to the rule. Unfortunately, people see that and they think, I'm going to do Uber. Whereas in reality, I don't know, there's one startup like that. There's probably 90 that are much more boring. They might exit for a couple million, but they still, you know, still give value to people. So I'd say that's evolved slightly now. And everyone's the AI of something rather than the Uber of something, but it's still the same thing of like jumping on a trend and thinking I'm going to do this tech without solving the problem first.
No, great shout. And I think on that point, the trend of profitable, sustainable startups is definitely turning in our favor as well. So Thanks, Gavin. Awesome conversation. Appreciate all your insight. Thanks very much.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you once again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are a potential founder in your early stages of developing a product or elsewhere in the journey struggling to achieve product market fit, we would love for you to reach out at www.earlyadoptershub.com. This has been another episode of the Accounting Tech Tar Pit, presented by Early Adopters Hub, the accelerator for accounting tech.